Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, supported by Lacolde, here with Benji Nyssen for Giro d'Italia at Stage 14, the first proper mountaintop finish of the Giro so far from Cittadella to Monte Zoncolan. It starts actually near the factory in which our show partner Lacolde produces their kits in the shadow of Monte Grappa, but they don't do Grappa today. 205 kilometers long, pretty flat for the first 120-130 k's. They do a cat 2 that's not too bad. Forcella Monte Rest, 10.5, 6.1% descent, a bit of a tricky descent actually, and then a short rise afterwards, then a valley of about 30 kilometers where it could all come back together if need be, and then the Zoncolan, the other side of it, not the normal, or this is the, I don't want to say easier, not as difficult side of Zoncolan. 14.1 k's, 8.5% the average, but it's all about the last 3 k's. The first 11 k's is pretty regular, 7 to 8% seems to be the standard sort of stuff, no real pinches. The last 3 k's, 12.5, 13.3% for those last three, with pinches up to 20-22%. So really nasty. I think we went with break yesterday just because we didn't know who would usurp Ineos. But a break went, but who was chasing it, Benji? And who was in that breakaway? Because a bit of a funny start to this stage.
It took a while for the breakaway to actually come out of the peloton. And there were quite a few attacks before we saw someone get away. I think the first rider to attack was Thomas De Gendt. And that didn't really go too far because I think like half a minute later, he was caught. So a lot of attacks kept following. Sagan even tried once because of the intermediate sprint and stage, all that stuff. And eventually, a group got away. And a group included Ponomar, Tratnik, Rocha, Albanese, Fortunato, Bennett, Affini, Oliveira, Mollema, Mosca, and Covey. We also had a moment where Fiorelli was trying to pass an Astana rider on the right and then bridge over. And he actually tried to do that. So I think I'm actually not sure he actually made it to the group because I haven't really noticed him since him trying to cross to the breakaway. But knowing this format of the breakaway, we've got Ponomar, the 18-year-old, so I was pretty hyped about it. We've got Trotnik, I was pretty hyped about that as well. And we had two teammates, Affini for George Bennett, and we have Mosca for Mollema. This is very important because this offers a rouleur, or at least a domestique in this group to pace between the valleys of the climbs and before the climb and even on the middle climb of the stage.
And the base and the early slopes.
Yes, exactly. If they are still there by that point, because we wouldn't know that yet at that point in the race. And to be fairly honest, I was like, that is a pretty strong breakaway. I think that with Trotnik as ruler, you've got Affini who can ride his whole soul out the entire stage for your boy George Bennett. And I was thinking, okay, this is a decent group, but the tempo, I don't know. Puccio was pacing at a certain point, but then stopped immediately. And
Ineos didn't care, as we said yesterday. Exactly. That's why I was like, oh, come on, Zoncolan, surely there's got to be the GC guy winning. And Benji's like, yeah, but look at how the Giro has been ridden so far, and Ineos in the ascendancy with Bernal, and that's what happened. Ineos, when they're pulling, they're letting the brake go. And then eventually, 30 k's later, after it's all settled in with a gap at about 6 minutes or so, yes, Astana start pulling. And it's like the stage that Bernal won, he then, what's the one? The little gravel one, the baby gravel stage, Campo Felice, he won that because FDJ kept the gap at 3 minutes all day and they didn't let it go up too much. So why let it go to six and then you've got to work that much harder to bring it back? Just start pacing at three or two. Anyway, start pacing. They're obviously interested in Vlasov. They get no help from anybody. No EF, no bike exchange. As we said, Ineos not helping. So EF for Carthy, I picked him for this stage because of Angleroo that he won. Bike exchange got Yates, and they got Nieve as well, and Schultz, who I'd like on this climb to help. Quickstep weren't helping. So just Astana pulling. And that's pretty much how the stage played out. Astana pulling all day. They get to the category two. The gap's holding about 5 minutes 50. It goes down to 5 minutes at the top of that Forcella Monterrest category two climb. Affini is doing a stellar job for George Bennett in that breakaway. I mean, he's almost extending it on his own. And then Astana attacked on the descent, Benji. It was a sleepy stage GC-wise, and then all of a sudden, Astana on the attack again, which you saw all the time in the Basque Country. And what did you see there in terms of Astana attacking? Was it just a deliberate attempt? Were they forcing pace, or did someone just lose the wheel behind them?
I think a combination of both, because I didn't exactly see them like hammer it in the descent, but they are pretty known for their descents, Astana. I think a lot of their riders are actually very good at descending. It's one of the skills that that team is great at. And despite not having Yone Zagiri here, for example, or Aramburu, they still have riders that can really smash those descents like crazy. And a gap opened up, like you said, a gap that opened up with seven riders at the front at a certain point. That was, I think, three domestiques for Vlasov. We had Bilbao, and we had Bernal with, I think, Castroviejo in that first group. Then a gap of, honestly, a good 15 seconds to the next group, solid. Which was basically everybody except for the team of Remco, who was caught in a third peloton, again, 15 seconds behind. So that gap in the descent started so quickly, and the gap was suddenly huge. Like, 15 seconds, pretty huge after a descent, to be honest. I think so. Definitely if it's like three pelotons. And we saw them slowly crawl back after Coffee's team started pacing in the second peloton, and the Remco's team started pacing in the third peloton. And while that looked all amazing and it was really cool by Astana, I'm afraid that it didn't really go anywhere at that point. And, well, they came back to the, the second group came to the first group, and then the Remco group caught up as well. So that was it for that move. But at the front of the race, we had the breakaway, honestly, working well together, because you have two riders that are riding their soul out. They're burying themselves, Affini and Mosca. Looking at Affini's face, it looks like he was genuinely dying trying to keep Bennett ahead of the peloton. And the gap wasn't actually going down while Astana was pacing.
He extended it.
Yeah.
So the Zonkland, it says, you know, 13Ks, 8%, but there's climbing beforehand, and it's like 2 to 4%. And the gap was at 5:20 as the peloton all come together. Astana pacing again. The gap's at 5:20. I think Astana are pacing with Pronsky, small guy, Kazaki, climber. He's 22. He's actually quite good, but he's a climber. He's pacing. And then Affini's on the front and Mosca pacing the break. And this is how gaps, because you always think, oh, how is the break gaining more time? We've got this massive engine, Affini pacing. He put a minute almost into the peloton going into the base, and they went into the base of the Zonkland with a 6:23 advantage on the peloton. 6:23, and I know it's a hard climb, but that's a big, big gap as long as people don't blow up. And no one was really, and they'd all worked together, no one's really attacked at that point, and it's still Astana pacing. Still Astana pacing, and the gap's not really going down. Okay, 5:20 and co, and etc. What did you see in the break, Benji? The odds are starting to really shift in their favor. Are you thinking Bennett and Mollema were being overrated given what we've seen so far in their in the Giro, and maybe Mollema's pedigree on these sort of climbs compared to other riders? And what were you seeing from, I think, other riders attacking earlier, Oliveira wanting to keep the pace up, etc., after Affini dropped off?
Yeah, when Affini dropped off and Mosca ended up dropping off as well, I was honestly looking at the odds of the breakaway on betting websites, because I don't want to promote betting in any way. And whatever we say on the podcast is not financial advice, let that be clear.
Unless
but
you
I was checking.
Money.
Okay. I lost money today, okay? on the finish today, just before the Zonkland start, I was looking at it, and I think it had Bennett in first and Mollema in on same, I think 3:25 or something.
Which basically means for the uninitiated. Yep. The reason we refer to that is because it's like an indication, just the implied probability of what people think are going to win. So Bennett, he went down to $2. That means people think he's got a 50% chance of winning the stage. Mollema was in at $4. So it was really, everyone's Bennett, Mollema. That's why I'm asking Benji, what was he looking at slightly differently from the other guys in the group?
I was looking at the other riders because I wasn't so confident in Bennett and Mollema. We have seen, honestly, not too much from them the last week and a half. I think Bennett had that breakaway stage with Brambilla, but a good Bennett drops them on the climb beforehand and is not caught up with that battle with Brambilla afterwards. He should have dropped them on the climb if he was in good form. And Mollema, he was unable to get into that breakaway, I think. Well, he got in that breakaway a few weeks ago, and Mader destroyed him completely. So like, to be honest, I wasn't too confident in the both of them. And I was looking at the others, and I've said this entire Giro that I was looking at Trotnik to win a stage somewhere in the Giro. He's been really underrated when it comes to his climbing, and the guy can push some real watts. But I was scared for the last 3 kilometers for Trotnik. But he was at odd 81. That means that how much chance do you have if you got odd 81?
1.2%. 1.1%.
Crazy. And I think Fortunato was about 40, 45 at that point. And I decided to throw, I think, $10 on Trotnik.
And I said Benji was crazy. I said, what are you thinking? I said, he's a heavier set guy. Yep. Like, he's not like a tiny climber type. I see him more of an engine. What are you thinking? Whereas Fortunato is like 5'6", 58 kilos,
yep,
dripping wet. And I think Fortunato is the guy that really got underrated in, yep, this breakaway. Looking at it simplistically, the last 3Ks are at 13%. Who is the skinniest, lightest, smallest guy in this break? Lorenzo Fortunato, Agnolo, Cometa, the Pro Conti team. And he had a couple of decent results. He's been there or thereabouts. The Giro, 21st in the San Giacomo climb. The Guardia San Fremondi, 24th. Campo Felice, 23rd. Now, these are results, nothing to write home about, but he's competent. And then you've got, this is the first really steep mountaintop finish. And so the way that the climb played out for the breakaway, who would go on to win this stage, is cat and mousing, people attacking. Bennett, I initially thought he's playing it smart, trying to ride smooth watts, allowing other people to close wheels. But actually, I just don't think he was that strong today. Same with Mollema. Oliveira was doing a lot of pacing. Trotnik goes clear in the saddle. He's put on what looks like a 34 cassette on the back cleverly today. And he just wants to ride his tempo before the steep stuff starts to get a bit of a gap, because he knows he's going to struggle there. And he's just riding his pace instead of everyone else attacking each other. Eventually, Fortunato bridges to him. Those two, I think, is key, really start working well together until the last bit, until the last 3Ks. They even go into 2Ks to go,
yep,
with all together. And we're thinking, at that point, we're thinking, this is trouble for Trotnik. Because, yeah, how concerned were you for Trotnik, Benji, when he's with Fortunato going into the last 2Ks? Did you think, like, was there literally anything he could do differently?
I was completely believing the dream, but I gotta be honest, like in the chat that you were in, I was saying, oh, I need hope right now because I don't have it. And that's because, well, you said it, he weighs more than Fortunato, he does have a bit of a punch, but he doesn't have the punch for 3 kilometers long on a steep section.
Yeah.
Fortunato, he's been climbing really well this Giro. He wasn't necessarily a full climber before this Giro. I thought he was more punchy sometimes, but in the end, I think that at the end of this, well, at the start of that 3 kilometer section, I was scared. I was generally scared. And definitely the moment that I looked at Trotnik's face in the wheel of Fortunato and it looks like he was biting one of his teeth out, that wasn't amazing to see.
Well, he was biting his teeth and Fortunato looked like he was crying on the steepest part. So I don't know, bad facial expressions from both of them. And the reason they're clear and we're like, these guys, one of these two is going for the win. They've put 45 seconds on Mollema, Bennett and Oliveira. And when we saw Oliveira pacing for Mollema and Bennett, we're like, they're done, because he's not a strong guy, but he's not the guy you need to bridge this back. And about behind, Astana have stopped pacing and Ineos are pacing, but they hadn't really before the first 3Ks. They were keeping the gap pretty stable. We'll go back to the GC men in a second, but they're 3-4 minutes plus behind. Fortunato goes clear. And we didn't really see him attack Trotnik. It's more just like he can keep doing the watts and turning over the gear on these 20% sections. And Trotnik starts to zigzag, and it's Fortunato just able to keep going, winning the stage, his first pro win on the Zonkalan. Incredible for the 25-year-old. The first win of Jola Cometa in the Giro d'Italia, surely their biggest win to date. And how much did he put into Trotnik? See, 26 seconds. So they were pretty much together. And Trotnik was about 10, 15 seconds behind and just kept going out because, yeah, once you crack on the Zonkalan, you're done. Eventually, the next best of the breakaway was Covey, actually, who had sat on for a lot and then started to attack and bridge back. But back in the GC group, Benji, when you saw Ineos pacing, was it a ferocious pace? I don't really feel like it was. When I saw everyone four wide, I mean, did you think that anyone should really be in trouble? And was anyone really put in trouble before the first 3 kilometers?
Yeah, not really. Bernal had about, I think, 12 teammates today. So by the time they started the Zonkalan, they could just...
Only five.
No. I count Astana as well. So
we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay. On the final climb, I think that the tempo indeed was not too high from them. I think that they knew that they need to make it until the last 3 kilometers with at least like one teammate left. Because on that last 3 kilometers, you don't have the benefit of drafting. You can't just have a rider ahead of you and benefit from that. There's near to 0% drafting, I would say. I'm not a math genius, but I'm pretty sure of that. So by the time they hit that, they need to have max one rider left. And Bernal has to do most of it alone from that point onwards, because then it becomes a battle of 1v1s in groups and so forth, trying to kind of, I think like the one reason that I would have a teammate with me at that point is as mental support. Because you're like, oh, that can still help me.
In the Vuelta on the Angler, didn't Kuss was helpful for Roglic, I feel like, mentally. Yep. I feel like it does help a little bit, definitely, especially for certain riders. But yeah, Ineos pacing first with Moscon. He blows up, then Narváez, long pull, strong pull for Narváez. Very good for Ineos, pulling him in for instead of Sosa. Then it was Castroviejo, not a strong pull. The group was bunching up. You could see Bora moving up with Grosz, Schaffner. I think it looked like Ineos, they were definitely running it defensively, and this is why the break was able to win. Then it was Martinez, short pull, and we saw as they got, this then brings us to the 2Ks to go or so, and we saw an attack from Simon Yates, the man who's been waiting in the wings for I don't know how long, Benji. Maybe it was almost with a kilometer to go that the times it kind of warps because it takes so long to do a K at these gradients. Yeah, bike exchange attacking off the pace of Martinez, who was riding within himself pretty clearly. Evenepoel was dropping, though, off that pace. And you can see him distancing. He's just slowly going backwards. Formolo and Co had dropped, obviously, at that point, and Nibali dropped ages ago. And yeah, Simon Yates, Benji, we expected this today.
Yeah, we said it, I think, yesterday that, well, not necessarily expecting it, but we thought that this could happen, something like that, because he was under the radar for the majority of the Giro so far. He kept popping up here and there, but he was never really losing much time in the back. And that offers opportunities. If you gradually improve over the first 2 weeks of a Grand Tour, that means that you're likely peaking in the third week. And I was scared for that with Simon Yates. I think that he's one of the more inconsistent riders usually, but he's played this Giro so far relatively perfectly in the sense that he lost time here or there. But he seems to be pulling through and seems to be becoming one of the better climbers by the third week here. So if he can keep that up, that's going very, very well for him. And he made that move on that section. I think Bernal was the only person that could follow. And everybody behind was cracking. I think that Vlasov was one of the first ones to crack, despite Astana pacing the entire stage. And Caruso was, I think, in the group just ahead of Vlasov. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. And I think there were two other people in that group, but I can't actually fully say who was still in that group. But the Koenigs were all gone. Like, it was 1v1 Yates and Bernal from that point. Like, at that point, it was clear that Yates is very strong here. Bernal is very strong here. And nobody else comes near them on this deep section. For sure. And they weren't going to come back.
And eventually we saw there was heavy fog on top of the Zonkalan. Bernal's appeared. And we're like, has he dropped? No. He'd gone clear, attacked Simon Yates at some point, right at the end. He's almost like the trademark Roglic surge, Benji. And he surged right at the end, and huge effort from him. And right, like, I don't know when it was, in the last 300 meters, but still, it takes a long time to do 300 meters at the end, looking like and confirming that he is the strongest rider in this race, gapping Simon Yates. Before we get to the full top 10 results, I want to mention our show partner, Lecol. I already said they produced their kit from where this stage started or near there in Cittadella. They produced it in the base of Monte Grappa. They've brought out their new Pro Air jersey that dropped recently. It's the product of extensive wind tunnel testing, and I've got to say, it looks pretty sick. You can get it in sky blue, black, as well as navy. That's just out recently, and there's free delivery on all orders over €60 and whatever that is in your local currency. LRCP listeners can also get 20% off all products with the code all caps LRCP20 LRCP 20. So thanks to Lacolle for supporting the podcast. But now onto the stage 14 results. Fortunato first, then Tranik. Covey of the GC men. Egan Bernal on 143 behind Fortunato. So easy win for the break in the end. 11 seconds behind is Simon Yates. Further back, the next best GC man, Danny Martinez at 222 in the group with Caruso and Ciccone. That suggests to me kind of confirmation that Danny Martinez was riding within himself on this climb. Ineos were trying to, I think they're trying to keep him as a second GC threat for the stages to come, which isn't a bad play. I'm very impressed by Ciccone's performance. Dan Martin at 227. Israel started to pull at the base of the Zonkland despite not offering any help all day. Dan Martin still at now over 8 minutes probably back on Bernal. No one knows what he's doing, so not even himself. So, yeah, I literally don't know what Israel doing. Like, were they going for the stage? If he got in the break, I mean, we've already done this topic, but if he was in the break today, he wins, Dan Martin. So, yep. Buchmann lost, I think, about 30 seconds plus on Bernal over that 40 seconds. So quite big gaps, actually, on the Zonkland, even though I have to say it was not an explosive race for the majority of it. It was a Vuelta-style stage, in my view. They just, the big GC group until the last 3Ks, then it explodes, and then we don't see anything because there's so much fog. Maybe not the best viewing experience or that exciting, but the GC gaps are large, and there's a lot of change in the GC, and I think that's a function of the stage being 205 kilometers, whereas the Angleroo, 150 or less. Yep. Here's the revised GC. Bernal first, Yates moves up to second, 133, Caruso, 151, Vlasov jumps down to fourth on 157. Carthy jumps down to, not a good day for him, 211. Buchmann stays the same, 236. Ciccone moves up on 303. Remco moves down further, losing over a minute 30 to Bernal on 352. Martinez moves up to 354. And Bardet moves up to 431. Foss down to 11th on 537. But yeah, Benji, Astana and Vlasov, what are your thoughts on how they rode today?
So yesterday on the pod, we mentioned that there's going to be at least one team that will make the mistake of pacing throughout the stage. I find it a mistake, definitely. I'll go through the details of that in a second. Of pacing, knowing that you're pacing Ineos to the bottom of the last climb where they will take over. You know that from the moment that you start pacing. Now, it starts with when they start pacing. First of all, the gap is already around 6 minutes the moment that Astana starts pacing. What? Like...
yeah, problem number one.
Problem number two, they were pacing slower than the breakaway. So how are you going to catch them in the end if you do that?
Let me just expand on that problem.
Yeah.
They deliberately made a decision after Forticella Monte Rest to slow up so that they could keep the whole team together until the base of the Zonkland. And they were just pacing slowly with Pronsky. They made that decision. They stopped pacing with Luis Leon. Yep. But yeah, that was problem number two.
Yep, exactly. That's actually a very good point that I even didn't write down yet. But that's indeed problem number two. Problem number three is that Vlasov has been dropped every single climb so far. And, well, how can you have such confidence to say, okay, I'm going to put my entire team on the table to try and win the stage while they already have 6 minutes the moment that we start pacing, and we're pacing slower than people in the breakaway, so we're not actually getting any closer. And at the bottom of the climb, they're going to have more time than the moment that we started pacing. So... yeah, that story didn't really last. Next to that, the people in the breakaway, Afenian and Mosca, you know that those two people are going to keep pacing. If you pace with two riders for the entire half of the stage in the peloton, that's the same as them pacing with two riders at the front for the entire half of the stage, which is Afeni, who can ride better than Fellini at the front of a group. I can tell you that. Like, we've seen him ride, I think, yesterday in the sprint, which is a bit weird to say, but it still happened. So that's, for me, a fad problem, that the moment that they do decide to pace, they decide to pace with two riders, while you know that at the front you've got the same two riders riding that arguably are better riders than the ones you are putting at the front to pace in the peloton. So you're not going to get any closer with that. It's actually a combined thing with the second point I'm making. But next to that, what is the difference here? So if you pace as Astana, well, I'll bring you to a different point first. So we hear on ride that Martinelli, the team manager of Astana, is saying something accordingly as, it's Zonkolan, we're riding because we want to have a champion that wins the stage. You want to have a champion winning on the stage at the end. Okay, if you're doing that, you need to ride faster than the rank weight to catch them. That's one thing. Next to that, what would you do if you don't have an Italian as a team manager? Likely not see the stage as that opportunity because, well, Garfi and EF, same situation, and they decided not to ride. And Garfi beat Vlasov on Angliru. So we can look at that as a bit of a comparison there. I think that Astana had in no way the need to ride on the stage. And I think it has... Oh, whenever
Movistar, I don't think it's that big a problem. I don't think Vlasov lost any more time today.
Time, yes, correct.
Because of what Astana did. I think they had a crack. It didn't work out. At the end of the day, Ineos did not pay Zonkalan that hard. They did not shred the group. Large GC group still going into the last 3Ks. Vlasov, okay, he's got no teammates on the Zonkalan, but no one attacked him early on the stage, and he didn't have to close the gap where a draft matters. I guess the last 3Ks, it's every man for himself, and he just didn't have the legs. So I guess it didn't cost them any more time, but it, to your point, Benji,
it cost Vlasov's them his entire team for the next week. Like, they won't be done after this, but they will have completely spent them on this stage.
That's a fair point.
There's so many other stages this week that it fits so much better.
Vlasov said on the podcast to us yesterday, last year he said 6 to 8% is my preferred gradients. Don't really like the steep stuff as much. Not my preferred gradients. He said this, it's not his preferred gradient. And so this Zonkalan, they basically did not tempo, but they didn't shred the group Ineos up to 3Ks. And then Yates just hit it and gapped everyone with Bernal on his wheel. And so you've just got this massive surge that Vlasov can't respond to. So it just didn't seem to be the right stage for Vlasov as well to do it. But what about Simon Yates, Benji? Do you think he's a real threat for Bernal now, a minute 30 back? Are you surprised Bike Exchange didn't pace? I mean, they had Nick Schultz. I think I'd criticize them a little bit more. They got Nick Schultz finishing 20th on the stage, and you remember got Breakaway guys up there. He finished it with Evenepoel.
I don't blame them.
You wouldn't have paced knowing that Yates wanted to attack, or do you just think Yates wanted to just, if he felt good, he felt good?
I think it benefits him that you're playing the under-the-radar card you've been playing for a week and a half. I think that benefits them because Simon Yates is not the one people have been looking at for a week and a half now. And if you would start pacing before the final climb, then every single team would be looking at Yates to make that move at the end. Now, to be honest, he'd still make the move if they would have paced, but the thing is, what difference would it have made? Like, if you pace here, you have every other team has climbers that have been dropped by Bernal on every uphill finish. And on this climb, if you use your entire team beforehand without knowing whether that would even succeed, while you've got plenty of other stages that are perhaps more fitting to make a bit of such a move, because then you can try something on a climb, for example, on that stage 16, for example. If you start going ham on a random climb there and you try and do something there, then you've got the sense to work with and so forth. Here you've got an actual climb to work with at the end. And if you have just that one climb at the end, you're literally bringing Ineos to the bottom of the climb. They're going to pace for 6 kilometers until they hit that 3-kilometer section. They had one rider left even. That was a bit unexpected. So great stuff there. And they didn't even have Sivakov here. So imagine if Sivakov was here.
Yeah, it would have been dropped for 5 minutes.
Yeah, and Martinez, what?
As I'm saying, Sivakov would have been dropped and lost 4 minutes. I think Martinez is better on this sort of terrain. But yeah,
I think so as well.
It's tough to say. I mean, it's Ineos domination right now.
For me, it hurts more because I feel like whenever Movistar does this exact strategy, people criticize them for it. And whenever that happens, well, I think that a lot of other teams get a free ride when it comes to tactics sometimes. Astana is a team that has had a lot of criticism for tactics as well in the past, to be honest. But I genuinely believe that today they made a mistake. It didn't cost them more time with Vlasov, but it did cost them a lot of energy with their teammates that, honestly, without them pacing the entire stage, the stage would have finished exactly the same.
I think I'm just so reluctant to criticize teams for trying. And we've seen teams not, since Lander crashed, no GC teams really trying. this Giro because Ineos is so strong. And I didn't want to, I never criticized, I don't think, Bahrain for trying in the Tour last year in the third week, and it came to nothing. And you got that, you know, the scared Lander face meme almost erupts from that. And that's why I'm so reluctant to criticize the team for having a crack. Yeah,
but that's a different stage, in my opinion. Like,
I know. But I'm just saying, the Giro, it's been a bit conservative so far. And Benji is right on balance that this probably wasn't the stage for Astana to do it. And it seems just based on Martinelli saying go for it today without really considering it all. But it's a shame because we've not really seen too many other GC teams take it up. And hopefully it doesn't mean that other teams are looking at what happened to Astana today and they're thinking, oh, I don't want that to be me in the later stages. Speaking of the later stages, stage 15 from Grado to Gorizia, bit of an easy stage for the GC guys, 146Ks. It goes into Slovenia tomorrow. Short stage too, and we've got a circuit. They do 1.7Ks at 8.1%. They do that climb three times. The Ciclamino point sprint is before that climb, but after a 1.2K, after a climbing section, I think Bora might pace there to try and put Solo under pressure because Sagan's not that far ahead of him in the Ciclamino points, and then they'll ease up. And then there's the last of that 1.7K, 8.1% climb is with 17Ks to go, short descent, and then at 600 meter, 8.1% pinch. Just at the base of that, there's bonus seconds too, which won't concern Sagan. That crest with 6Ks, 5.5Ks to go, there's also a short rise in the last K even. There's a couple of little rises. I think this is Sagan all over tomorrow. And I think Bora are going to absolutely slap that last climb. And it'll be Nizzolo hanging on for dear life as the probably quickest man left. Who do you have for tomorrow's stage? Yeah, probably.
Like, indeed, Sagan is the all-out favorite if the peloton takes us home. And I wouldn't see a reason for Bora not to try and bring this home with the peloton. But they failed on stage three, so there's a possibility that they fail in doing so. If, for example, we've got a breakaway, and we know that Tratnik will probably try and be in it because it's in Slovenia, despite being in the breakaway today.
Yeah, he's strong.
Then that would really fit him, but he just wrote second on the Zolpilon, so he might be a bit tired. Like, I was looking at Tratnik for tomorrow's stage, but now that he's second on the Zolpilon, I don't see that happening. And I was looking at a Moscon for this finish as well, but he crashed the other day. So he was like earlier in the train today than I expected him to be. So I think that crash might actually have taken something away from him. And if that's the case, then I don't know if he's going to get even a leash to get away here. I think that they're going to play it defensively because they're winning the Giro right now by quite a bit of an advantage. So, can I offer any other rider for this than Sagan?
I'd love to see a Feeney go on the break again, get a chance. Probably a little bit pinchy for him. Moscon's the obvious name, but he won't get. Felline is quite nice out of the breakaway. Fabio Felline, I'd like to see, but he might be on.
He might be tired after working for Bernal today.
Chimolai is a good one. Chimolai, can they get him?
Chimolai would be good.
They won't send him in the break, though, so he'd have to beat Sagan from the group. So Chimolai is a good option, as well as, I don't know, that's about it. I think I just like Sagan a lot for this stage. I think they'll be looking at this one pretty hard, to be honest. Agreed. That's tomorrow's stage. I think a couple of, just one more bit of news from the Giro d'Italia that Benji and I want to round off was Dylan Groenewegen DNFing or DNSing today's stage, as well as David Dekker for Jumbo-Visma. I just wanted to throw to Benji to see what he thought about the Groenewegen late inclusion for TJV and, of the Giro and how it went for them and whether he thinks it was the right decision.
I think that the decision-making around this let's be honest, everything we say now is completely in hindsight. I think before the Giro started, we were pretty hyped
really.
To see.
We criticized it before.
Yeah, true. I think that the risk that they took was that Dekker and Groenewegen have not raced together and have not done a lead out and sprint in a race together, which means it's risky to do that. So I think that Dekker, I don't remember him ever being a lead out before, which...
Why would he be? He's always been the star when he's been in under 23. And then even at UAE, he was riding for himself. So I don't think he ever has any experience in it.
Yeah, and like it isn't automatically that when you're a sprinter, you're a good lead out, for example. The other way around, if Groenewegen was doing so for Dekker, it would have been pretty difficult as well. But they had Dekker plan to try and sprint at the Giro. I think that with the results that in hindsight they have, that Dekker would have just as much chance to get in such a situation or such a finish than Groenewegen so far, because he didn't podium a stage. If I recall correctly, he was fourth on the first one, or was he third? I don't know. But like all, in hindsight, it doesn't look good. But there's the opposite argument where we don't know if Dekker was overly tired or something. Like, he wasn't that great overall, but maybe that's as an influence, as a consequence from him being selected and then having to do lead out work that you're not experienced too much with. I don't know, just all in all, I think that the decision-making, I can't criticize it in the way that I'll say, oh, they shouldn't have brought Groenewegen to the Giro. It was also a blind guess for them, just as much as it was for me, for example. I find it sad that Dekker didn't get an opportunity for a sprint, and that's kind of my take on that, I guess.
Bit of a failed experiment from my perspective. I think, yeah, send him to Hungary. I got the video right there. Could have made some better clips. Plus, we could have got a couple of wins under the belt instead of having a tough time at the Giro. And I think if I'm David Dekker, I'm a little bit irritated. You're like, really? So I'm going to have my opportunity to sprint. It's kind of like what they did with Foss. It's like Foss does well in the TT and then they drop him back in the first climbing stage to help Bennett. And it's a waste of time. It's like, oh, David Dekker is going to do lead out for Groenewegen, and then Groenewegen doesn't get a top three in any of the sprints. And like the sprint field here after Ewan's gone, not exactly like the best. No Ewan, no Bennett. So yeah, I think a bit of a failed experiment from that perspective. And I'm not sure if I'm David Dekker, I would have been too happy either. So yeah. And it also, it put Groenewegen in the spotlight a lot, and the Jakobsen comments came out. I don't think it would have been the same way if he went to Hungary and just got a few races under his belt. So yeah, strange, and we'll see how that plays out with David Dekker. Maybe Dekker just didn't have the legs either, because it's his first Grand Tour and the Giro has been so difficult. But now we're going to move on to another topic that happened in Andalusia today for you podcast listeners. Here it is. Vuelta Andalusia Ruta Ciclista del Sol, Benji, the last stage. We won't do a full race group recap. It's two pro stage. Miguel Angel Lopez ended up winning GC, but there was a nasty crash at the end with Daryl Impey and Rob Stannard. I'll just go through the last sort of corner to explain what happened. Ethan Hayter is getting a lead out and Ineos completely stuff it up. Hayter tries to lose the wheel, but then tries to keep the wheel, but he ends up just riding in the wind with his teammate 10 meters ahead of him, and then he just starts his sprint. So Ineos completely botched this. There's a small group of 12 riders that have broken clear. Hayter was the favorite. Also in that group, the quick men, you have Rob Stannard for Bike Exchange. You had Girmay pacing hard, keeping the gap, as well as Daryl Impey. They come into the final. Hayter starts to sprint early. Impey follows him, getting a slipstream, moves to the left. It's a straight finish. We've even got a line on the road. Stannard comes from deep, gets into Impey's slipstream, starts to move to the left, and Daryl Impey moves from his line to the left, collides his back wheel with Rob Stannard's front wheel. Stannard sprinting straight. Stannard was going to win this stage, and they both go down hard. Impey onto his right shoulder and Stannard down. Stannard gets straight back up, and Impey look pretty banged up. Straight away, you could see Stannard remonstrating with Impey, threw his sunnies at him, he's pointing at him. This is with Impey lying on the ground. And I feel for Stannard. I thought I'd be pretty pissed off too. How did you see this sprint, Benji? You've looked at it pretty closely and analyzed, you know, that where the line was, etc. Who's at fault here?
So firstly, before I dive into who's at fault, I'd like to explain why the certain person is at fault. We know that there's a rule in the UCI book that says you can't deviate from your lane and endanger somebody. So three parts of that rule: you can't deviate. During that deviation, you can't endanger anybody. And deviating happens when you go off your lane. And this is after launching your sprint. Now, they were launching their sprint. They had launched their sprint. And Impey was riding straight ahead to the line. So there was no one ahead of him or something. He was he had launched a sprint already.
That's like 70 meters to go. 50, yes. 70 meters to go.
Exactly. He's riding almost literally in the middle of the road with Hayter on his right and Rob Stannard in his wheel. Rob Stannard decides to go left around Impey. And I can't tell you if Impey saw that Rob Stannard was there, but he went to the left. He deviated from his lane, which is clear because suddenly he was on about 25% of the road. So that means that at least a quarter of the road, he moved to the left during that. And he hit, well, the upcoming sprinter. And that is Rob Stannard. You cannot do that. You can't deviate like that. And you are at fault if you do that. Impey is at fault here. Impey broke the deviation rule. And Rob Stannard and Impey crashed because of it. Now, I've seen the commentators, I think, was it GCN?
Unbelievable. It's been unbelievable. I'm about to go off, Benji.
Yeah.
So in the light of what has happened in the last year with Groenewegen and Jakobsen, with Buani and Jake Stewart, the furor over Buani with Jake Stewart, and like we agreed, you know, 3 month suspension, we did a video and we're like, yep, 3 months seems about right for Buani, reckless, endangering Stewart. Stewart didn't crash. I know he hurt his hand, but he didn't crash, go down hard. Stannard is sprinting his straight lane. He's in the last 50 meters. He's going fully for the win. Okay, and people are victim blaming Rob Stannard. Oh, he had his head down for a bit. He should look where he's going. It's like, well, he can see Impey with plenty of space. He's got plenty of space in front of him. Impey's on his right-hand side. Impey now, the rule doesn't require intent for any wrongdoing. Intent's irrelevant, but Impey looks down twice, and after the second time he looks down, and it's not as obvious as when Groenewegen checks, but when he looks down straight away after the second time, he starts his move across to the left, and he might have known Stannard was coming, but we can't know for sure. So Impey, when you look at overhead and you look at the space Benji's drawn, it's clear that Impey's deviated. He's launched his sprint, and the commentator's saying, racing incident. In fact, they're saying, Stannard should really mind his front wheel. Oh, there's plenty of space for Stannard to go around him. Oh, why is Stannard angry at the finish? It's really bad sportsmanship from Stannard. It's like, mate, Stannard was about to win. Impey seen him, maybe seen him coming, deviated, chopped his front wheel, and Stannard's gone down at over 60 k's an hour. I'd be pretty pissed off too. And okay, people are like, oh, well, he could have gone around him. Fabio Jakobsen could have braked. Is it his fault he crashed? He could have braked and then he wouldn't have crashed. Does that mean Groenewegen's not at fault? Like, it's just stupid logic like that. If you're sprinting in a straight line, you should be entitled to keep to that line. And Benji and I are always on about this. You know why, Benji? Because nothing's going to come of this, I don't think.
Yep.
Because it's happened during the Giro. It's a smaller two-pro race. Daryl Impey's generally probably seen as a nicer guy. And yeah, it's no harm, no foul. And there's going to be no suspensions. He's not Nasser Buani. Like, what percentage chance do you think there's going to be a UCR disciplinary thing? UCR going to come out and say something and he's going to get a ban?
5%, because there's no media that will jump onto this, I think. Like, with Buani, his name is big because he had historical events happening. He had historical deviations and so forth. He was also a victim of a lot of deviations, but that was left out a lot of the times that when he was basically character and assassinated during that time. Now, do I believe that the punishment that Buhani had was fair? Yes, I did. We had that video last time. Did. And do I believe that Groenewegen's punishment was relatively fair? Yeah, I believe that. Yeah,
fair in a vacuum. Fair in a vacuum.
Correct.
Because now Daryl Impey will not most likely get a 3 month suspension. I think it should be 3 months, maybe more. Maybe more because, you know, yep, what? Nasser Buani had a legitimate racing reason to move to the left to jump on Viviani's wheel, which we mentioned was a mitigating factor. He was just reckless in doing so. Daryl Impey's pretty much just deviated when he's got plenty of space with his lane next to Hayter. For what reason? Why is he deviated? And I think we should be encouraging people, if they're capable of doing it, to keep sprinting straight. Now, there's a couple of things, and the reason why he probably won't get suspended is because Bike Exchange, somewhat disappointingly, are trying to hush this up, because as I said, there was criticism of the way Stannard was behaving because Impey's lying on his back hurt, and Impey was a teammate of Stannard and on Bike Exchange for a long time until he moved to Israel Startup Nation this year. And Stannard was angry and he was like, what the fuck did you just do? You knew exactly what you're doing, pointing at him. He was absolutely furious, and if Impey had gotten up and wasn't so hurt, he would have fought. They would have punched on. 100% if Stannard was that mad. Then after the race, you see the Bike Exchange statement, and I think this is a lot of PR dressing. It's not on Stannard's Twitter that I can see. I haven't checked his Instagram. And they're calling it a racing incident. They got a quote from Stannard. Now, I haven't seen him say this. It's just a written quote on their website. I was just unlucky in the final. I did a great sprint but was unlucky with the crash. I'm hoping Darrell's okay. It's not a good way to finish the race, but it's part of racing, and I don't think it's anyone's fault. I think that is complete bullshit. And that's all because Impey was probably well-liked in the bike exchange team. They don't want to cause any more trouble with him. They're trying to not get Stannard criticized for pointing a finger. And, yeah, I think if you want to know what Stannard really thinks, look at the finish line. Any thoughts on why do you think Bike Exchange put that out, Benji? Is it just because they like Darrell Impey?
It wouldn't surprise me at this point. Like, there's no other reason why I would expect that to happen. Like, if it's another team with a rider that is not connected to them.
If Bouwani did that.
Yeah, of course. He'd get murdered for it. Like, genuinely, like, Impey does not have the history of this, which means that people are not jumping on it. And I think that it's not only the team that is doing so, but I think media will probably not jump on this event either too much because it's a less watched event. Chalet was also less watched, but the only reason that Dad got out was because it was Bouwani doing it. And Jake Stewart
fired it up because he's playing it down, Stewart, and not criticizing, but he played it up on Twitter afterwards. And so that's also an important difference. And, yeah, I mean, comment down below if you're watching on YouTube or let us know, do you see this any differently? The way we see it, two guys sprinting in a straight line, one guy cuts across him. It's pretty clear cut to us. We even have a line in the middle of the and in the road showing what the straight lane is. And, Benji, not only have the media not picked it up, the UCI commissaires haven't. There's no – we can't tell if Darrell Impey was relegated or not. He's last in the official results.
Well, relegated, yes, but BQ – don't think so.
I don't know. There's been no real comment from the UCI or the race organizers, so we're in the dark. We're recording this pretty shortly afterwards. But it's just another instance, right, when people say, and Richard Pluger on Jumbo Visma was saying there's inconsistent refereeing from the UCI commissaires about Groenewegen, he is kind of right because, and we will wait to see if we're wrong, it is inconsistent. And I think if they did, the UCI put out the other day, what was that statement, Benji, with the Bouwani thing? We're committed to the safety of the riders. We'll enforce these with our iron fist. And, yeah, maybe it will be wrong. Hopefully, the point of doing this is that hopefully it brings more attention to it. But hope they're both okay. Hope Stannard's okay. Would have been a nice victory for him, certainly. And I've got to say, Hayter didn't really deserve the win because they completely bungled that finale. But let us know what you think or like the video down below if you're watching on YouTube about this incident. Ciao.